You're watching a movie with Silas.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to You're Watching a Movie with Silas Lindenstein. Today, I am interviewing the director of a Seattle-based film, Know Your Place. The director's name, Zia Mohajerjazby. He is from Seattle, not no longer here. All the good ones move away, I guess. But his film takes place sort of in the Central District of Seattle, Washington. It won several awards at the Seattle International Film Festival for the Golden Space Needle Award, New American Cinema Grand Jury Prize at SIFF. It even was a nomination for the Seattle Film Critics Society's local award. And that was a disappointment to me because it was my favorite film of that year. And this was a couple years ago, and finally it has gotten a release coming out. A big release. And so it's premiering. So the director's out doing these press interviews. And so being a Seattle celebrity that I am, I was able to get him in here. So I have a great interview with him, talks a little bit about the film, what sparked it, how it got created, and get to know him, of course, with my 7 questions. If you haven't seen the film yet, it's let me tell you a little about it. It's a drama. So it's called Know Your Place, a drama. It's a slice of life set in present day Seattle. It stars Joseph Smith as Robel Holly, an Eritrean American boy of 15 who embarks on an errand to deliver a huge and heavy suitcase across town destined for a sick family member in his parents' homeland. He enlists the help of his best friend, Mahim Tadasi, played by Natnel Mibratu, when an unexpected turn transmutes his simple task into an odyssey across the city of Seattle. Navigating directions to make his delivery on time, along with the challenges of familial responsibility, self-identification, and dislocation amid the ongoing redevelopment and economic displacement of the only community he has ever known as home. So it's a drama, slice of life. It's pretty fascinating, especially if you're from Seattle. You will understand the displacement aspect that the Eritrean community has been going through, or really anybody in the Central District of Seattle. So yeah, really, gentrification hits those notes. You really get this closeness to the boys in this. You feel for them. You get to understand them. Man, it is so Seattle. Like, there's some great shots of Seattle. It shows you how beautiful this city is and our neighborhoods. And I really think if you're from Seattle, you might really enjoy this film. Well, I think anyone will enjoy the film. But, you know, it's whenever we get our city on the big screen, it's extra special. And this film deserves all the recognition. It's a great first-time feature film for the director, Zia, and I look forward to seeing what else he's going to do. So I hope you do too. So anyway, that's it. That's it. That's the interview. Please like, subscribe. You want to hear more interviews like this? Let's see what the numbers, okay? Like and subscribe and share this interview with local Seattle director, well, former Seattle native, Zia Mohajerjazby, because I'm so good at saying names.
You're watching a movie with Silas.
Zia?
Yes,
Zia. Hey, Zia, okay. Can you pronounce your last name for me so when I say it wrong, I have a real good excuse?
Yeah, sure. It's Mohajerjazby.
That's exactly what I was going to say. Okay.
Yeah. Thankfully, one of those, it's fully phonetic. There's no and secret letters or anything like that, so.
Well, hey, thanks for coming. My show, you're watching a movie with Silas Lindenstein and Black and a Half here. I'm a Seattle-based podcast and show. So, and I'm actually a member of the Seattle Film Critics Society. This is Seattle Film Critics Society. I was on the nominating committee I nominated this film, Know Your Place. I was actually rather livid when it didn't get selected number one. Like They picked a, these weirdos picked a documentary. I was like, there is no more Seattle of a film than this. I don't think I've seen anything that has captured Seattle like this film, like in any recent times. Like, I'm curious, is this, well, now that I see, I'm guessing you're not Etrian or Etrian, right?
No, not Etrian,
right.
No.
Okay. So I was getting, my first question was going to be, so is this a, was this really self, was this about you?
Right, the autobiographical,
yeah,
or something.
Yeah. So what drew you to this story?
Yeah, I mean, so the genesis of this project was many years in the making. So my roots are Iranian-American, and I'm half Lithuanian, half Iranian.
Okay.
I grew up with a big sort of Iranian, you know, immigrant family and community. And so anyway, the way this all kind of came together was honestly over a number of years. It just kind of, it organically kind of evolved. But back in the early 2000s, I was, you know, starting out as a filmmaker in the Seattle hip hop scene, making a lot of music videos and things like that. And at the time, there was a place called Hidmo, which was on 20th and Jackson. Okay. And that was started by Rahwa Habte, who's Eritrean and was like an older sister to me. And she was helping me at the time kind of get community together and folks on my film crew and this and that when I was sort of just like a fledgling filmmaker. But this place, Hidmo, was like sort of the beating heart of kind of my experience of coming up as an artist in Seattle. It was a restaurant, a bar, but it was also like a community gathering space.
Okay.
So I met a lot of people through there. Other filmmakers, photographers, artists, rappers, writers, journalists, teachers, it felt like the whole city kind of converged, you know, at Hidmo, you know, throughout the years that it was there. And Hidmo was just up the street from Yeso Terrace.
Okay.
Which, you know, as you being from Seattle, you know, Yeso Terrace, as we know, has completely been redeveloped in recent years to high rises and market rate condos and all types of things.
Yeah.
But a lot of my friends who were, you know, Habesha, Eritrean, Ethiopian, all grew up in Yesler, like in the 80s and 90s. And so this, a couple of my friends on my film crew, one friend in particular, Futsum Sagai, he came up in Yesler Terrace, and we got to talking with, you know, a couple other friends about, hey, let's make a film in Yesler before it gets torn down. And so we, you know, I started kind of writing a story for that, with a couple other friends, and I wrote the screenplay, and that kind of evolved over a few months. This was back in 2013.
Okay.
And so the idea also in capturing the neighborhood, you know, as authentically as we could, was let's cast that film from the neighborhood as well. Let's just see what we can do with that. So that's actually how I got connected with Joseph Smith, who plays Robel in Know Your Place. I met him, you know, when he was 10 years old. He was still living in Yesler with his family. And we made that short film called Hagerasa. And that's also how I met Nati, who's Fami in Know Your Place.
Okay.
So, you know, after we made that short film together, it just felt like I couldn't, like, the energy of all that and kind of that, the evolution of that project, it just felt like our work together wasn't, you know, complete with just a short film. So, you know, in the intervening years, I moved to Los Angeles, and while I was here in the first couple of years, I got the idea essentially for Know Your Place, and I was thinking about these two, and so I wrote the film with them in mind to star in it. And so a couple of the other performances and folks that show up in Know Your Place were also in Hagerasa, this short film we made in Yesler. I think so. I guess the long answer to your question is really just, or the short answer to your question, I just was kind of inspired by what my experience in community in Seattle just sort of became, you know, through Hidmo and through filmmaking and through the friends and company that I was keeping and the relationships that sort of came out of making this film in Yeso Terrace, and how also without us kind of knowing it, Yeso Terrace felt like one of the first major sort of development projects that was kind of on the cusp of like this gentrification sort of sweeping through Seattle at like an increasing speed and intensity, right?
So, yeah.
I think that really played a role in kind of elevating my own consciousness as to what was happening in my city, you know, and the tech boom that was sort of converging on us unimpeded in any way. And so being apart from Seattle and being in Los Angeles, kind of that sort of homesickness and, you know, being away from the folks that I, you know, been so close to for so long, that the idea kind of emerged of like, all right, look, you know, what would it look like to do something, you know, at a bigger scale and kind of go deeper into some of these subjects. So
it's, I was wondering about like, as a, so is this your debut film, like feature?
Yes, then? This is my first feature film. Yeah.
So and, did you want to go, like, I sort of think like a slice of life is type of film is kind of a bold move for a first one, rather than going like, I'm going to be the action guy. Like, let me do a Seattle action film. Like, is that the, do you think that is the, this is, is this indicative of the type of work you expect or hope to be doing through?
In many ways, I would say, yeah, I think I'm really attracted to, I mean, it's such a filmmaker kind of 101 thing, honestly, but man, new wave cinema the world over is like, it's just like my favorite thing, right? Like, I love French new wave cinema, Japanese new wave, you know, like, the films of Wong Kar-wai, of course, and like really, like, what's central to me is Iranian new wave cinema of like the 90s. So Jafar Panahi, Abbas Kiarostami, Mohsen Mahmoudov, like all these guys. There's a film called The White Balloon. I think it was from early 90s, and that was like a really formative experience for me. I saw that at the Seven Gables Cinema with my dad back when I was like 7 years old or something.
Yeah.
Like, but anyway, like, those films really speak to me because there's almost like an elevation of just daily lived experience into a sort of kind of multi-dimensional, kind of nuanced, poetic read of reality, right? And it's and the stakes are like, the stakes almost remain small, but they sort of go down further, right? It's like the stakes have many layers to them, as opposed to, we got to save the city, we got to save the world. The stakes are all massive, but like, we can't actually relate to them in our everyday life, you know, just walking around where we live and spend our time. So I would say,
I think this is the only film that, like, I mean, I felt a like such a connection to those characters through it, like, and I felt like I was, you know, me, even as a native, or not a native Seattle, but since 2000. So that, I mean, 24 years. So I've been here a while. Like, it felt like you were just like lifting this, like the curtain behind a subsection of Seattle that I don't see every day, that I don't interact with. And it felt like I'm really getting to know some folks in Seattle. And at the same time being aware, like, oh, well, they shot this a few years ago. That's this. That whole community might be uprooted now, like, what's there. But like, it's this, yeah, like I felt this closeness to that group. And I wanted to reach out to all my Etrian friends that I hadn't seen in a while, go like, I'm so sorry. We're taking your Seattle from you.
Just to speak to that briefly. And going back, so I guess the short answer again to your other question is like, I'd say I think it's indicative of work that I want to do and continue evolving with that. And to what you just said too, is that idea of kind of pulling a curtain back. I honestly feel like that's one of the dysfunctions or disservices of American systems, right? And how they operate. Is this like, we are all actually next to each other all the time, but there's so many invisible barriers because of the way racism operates, the way capitalism operates, the way all of these things sort of separate what might potentially be ease of access to one another and community, right? It's like, you know, there's so many invisible things actually holding people back. And I think we're socialized also in a way where we, I think subconsciously or unconsciously sort of capitulate to those barriers that are set up between us. And so in some ways it's kind of like, I think one of the functions and roles of art is to sort of step across and step through those lines, right? And
yeah.
But I mean, I hope in some small way that's, you know, that's what we were able to do with this film, and that it's meaningful and authentic to, you know, making efforts to do that. And I hope like that's kind of the impact that it has in some way. And I think how you make something is really important as much as what you make too. So yeah.
Okay. I like that. How you make it just as important. I think what you just said there about the connections, I feel like we had a shot at breaking through all social barriers, and it was Lyft 2013, and we blew it. Everybody was so happy when Lyft started, and we were picking up strangers, and it was your friend with the car, and I was meeting all sorts of people, and everybody was like, this is amazing. You could just summon a car and meet a new person and discovering a new world. And it took about a year, and then everyone's like, no, it's a taxi. I'm sitting back. That's it. That was it. We lost. Nah, that was it. I connected with people. That was too much. We're doing it. But hey, so every time someone comes on the show, my show for the first time, there are seven questions that I ask everybody.
Okay.
They're the Silas Lindenstein's world famous seven questions. And one day I'll have a wonderful graphic to go up when I say that. So here's my questions. Number one, what are you most nerdy about? And when I say nerdy, it doesn't have to be Star Trek or Star Wars. Well, that's fine. Yeah, yeah. But like, what is that thing that really you dig
what
into?
Am I nerdy about?
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, so we'll set cinema aside then, just for purposes of diversifying our dialogue here. I think Legos, man. I still love Legos.
Yeah?
Yeah. Yeah. I still build with them. I still play, mess around with them. I don't play with them necessarily, but it's like,
right.
I find it hella relaxing to build Legos.
I've heard that. I've heard people say it's fairly a soothing thing.
Yeah. I'll cop a set at least once a year, you know, build it, put it on a shelf, you know, that kind
so
of thing.
You do keep it intact. Like when you,
Yeah.
Is there one you're coveting? That you're like,
series that I'm into is the modular building. So it's like, it looks like a little town.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. It looks like a little European village or something like that. So I that. It's cool. It's like, yeah, that's definitely like the thing that I've nerded out on since I was young. That was like the one toy that I kind of had, you know,
yeah,
in my childhood.
I love that. All right. Number two, what's something that you love to eat?
Ooh, man. One thing.
Yeah. Like that what's that go-to that thing or that.
I mean, I guess let's go with Persian food. Let's say Orma Sabzi. Orma Sabzi is like, it hits every time. You can't really do it wrong. Well, you can't.
What is it?
So it's the main ingredient. A collection of herbs in a stew. Usually sometimes use lamb, but it's usually like beef stew meat with kidney beans, onions, turmeric. And the main herb in it is fenugreek. And I think there's parsley and green onion and all this stuff. And then you put, there's like lemon juice in it and everything, and you stew it over a number of hours, and then you serve it over rice. And
okay.
It's perfect.
Is it a dish I would find usually at a Persian restaurant? Or
you
is
could,
it...
yeah, you could. And it's totally one of these, it's one of those dishes where everyone cooks it in their home, but it's also like at weddings and it's at restaurants, and it's like a staple of Iranian cuisine. So it's like, yeah.
Okay.
I love gourmet sabzi for sure.
Oh, I'm gonna see if I can find that. I'm gonna see if I can find that. In Seattle, do you have a recommendation?
Oh, dude, there's not a ton. I want to say there's, in Bellevue, there's Caspian, which I think is pretty solid. And then I want to say there's Persepolis Restaurant, Persepolis, on a University Way towards the north end by like Ravenna Park.
Okay.
That's where Caspian used to be back in the day. Those are kind of like the two. And then I want to say maybe there's like one in Kirkland and this and that, but there's not a whole ton. Oh, there's one called Padria in Kirkland near Juanita Beach. The lady that runs that is awesome.
Okay.
So, yeah. Shout out to her. Remember her name. We actually always talk about cinema and Iranian films and stuff like this here. So.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
All right. Number three, what's something that you love to drink?
Sparkling water, hands down. Yeah.
Do you have do you have a go-to brand?
Oh, not really. I'm sort of brand agnostic when it comes to the sparkles. I've gotten grown partial to Spindrift these days recently. Lemon Spindrift is pretty good. But yeah, as long as it bubbles.
Okay.
I'm good.
All right. What kind of music do you love?
Ooh. Man, it's funny. And my brother, even being a DJ, it's like of course I love music, but it's like I'm more of a catalog when it comes to like cinema and stuff. But I would say like definitely I'm a fan of hip hop for sure. And then I also listen to like I mess with Bollywood soundtracks a lot. There's one in particular since childhood that we mess with called Mocha Bala. That's like, I still like rock that album like from start to finish at least 10 times a year. And then my guilty pleasure for sure is this house music.
Oh yeah?
Yeah. And maybe less like pop house stuff, but like I mess with like trance music, stuff like that. For, you know, since I was like 13 or whatever, that kind of became my thing.
It's my brother's. Yeah. My brother's a DJ down in the Bay Area, and
that's his thing.
I believe so. He's talked to me about a lot of music, and that goes over my head sometimes. I'm like, is this from the 90s? Because that's where I'm at. I'm stuck there. Number five. What do you love to create?
That's a good question. I mean, I'm a filmmaker, obviously. So I like to create our love. I love to create. All right. This is maybe a strange way of explaining it. So there's a time of day, it's like magic hour, right, into twilight, where I like to take a lot of walks, whether I'm in Seattle, LA, doesn't matter where I am. And there's that thing where like the light kind of starts turning blue, and then people turn on like lamps in their windows and stuff. And so there's like that amber light that mixes with that blue light.
Yeah.
And there's a feeling in that, right? And sometimes like the air will smell good. It'll smell like jasmine. It's like in May or June, and it smells like orange blossom or this or you know, in Seattle, it smells like trees. Or this time of year, it kind of smells like that dry grass and the pine or whatever. That thing, I love to make images that hold whatever that constellation of sensations, that feeling it puts in me. I love to create images that are imbued with whatever that feeling is in my nervous system. So that is, I think, evident in some of the work that I've done in film. So like, I love that.
That's a wonderfully like specific answer that I don't like, that I know exactly what you're talking about. And it's a hard quality to describe, like that moment. I love that. That's a fantastic recreating that wonderful moment. Okay. Number six, what's a game you love to play? What's a game you love to play?
Man, it's been a long time since I've played many games. This could be also the nerding out on thing. This is probably the nerdiest thing that I sometimes do. So I was never very good at this game, but are you familiar with StarCraft 2?
Yeah. Yeah.
So I will still watch like gamer replays of that stuff, like the, you know, the international whatever, because there's something about the commentating that makes me laugh like the whole time. It's just like it's like the way it's commentated, like it's a horse race. Like it's
right.
It's like so that I did enjoy playing that game at one point. And I still enjoy watching that game. And that shit is just hilarious to me. And it calms me down sometimes, you know.
Just the commentary about the StarCraft thing.
Yeah, like one of my favorite dudes, he's like from the Netherlands. And so he's got his the way he speaks is like kind of inflected with that. And he's like an Uber nerd, and he's always cracking these like, I don't know. It's
just
like,
yeah.
It's pretty niche, but you know.
Yeah.
I tend to enjoy it.
That's hilarious. I love that. All right, last question, number 7. In 100 years, when someone reads your biography, what do you want to be remembered for?
This dude really cared about people, and he did his best to let them know.
Oh, that's sweet.
I don't know, man. I think that's like one of the motivating factors to make art. You know, I think self-expression is obviously, you know, part of that. I think there's ways to create things that are hopefully impactful in the moment that they exist. But ultimately, it's like you love people. And I, you know, and with filmmaking, it's like you don't do that by yourself either. And I think it's a way to connect with folks far outside of your own experience. You need a lot of people that come together to make something mm-hmm. with you. And, you know, every contribution, whether it's just a conversation or what somebody does on set or what somebody does, you know, after the fact in terms of getting the word out, whatever it is. I appreciate this conversation for that reason too, you know. But like, I think there's a sort of collective collaboration and sort of community that can kind of come out of that if you're intentional about the process. And so, just learning to do that more and more and everything is like, I feel like just making art to sort of connect while doing it and also with what you make. That's sort of central, right?
So yeah,
that's it. So yeah, that's I think if I could, you know, and if anyone's reading my biography in 100 years,
then yeah,
damn, right,
damn, like, that's right.
I'm not expecting anybody to read anything about me in 100 years, but you know.
Oh well, man, well, thank you so much for coming on. Congrats on the film finally getting some, you know, I've been waiting for it to pop out. I think it was two years ago that I saw this film, and I was like, those actors are almost—they're gonna graduate from high school. Like
how old are they? 35.
Yeah, so like finally get their dues and everything. And I'm glad to see it. It's starting to premiere everywhere and everything. Yeah. So
and you know, since your show's based in Seattle, I guess I'll call this out too. But we are coming back to SIFF Cinema Egyptian August 23 and 24.
Oh, excellent! Yes.
Yeah, so we'll be in town again. So there'll be a Q&A with some of the cast and myself on August 23rd after the evening show at the Egyptian. So
okay,
we'll be in town soon.
Well, it's fantastic. Hope some of the listeners come and check it out.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. So thanks for coming on.
Hey, thanks for talking with me. Nice to meet you.
You're watching a movie with Silas, and it's dying in the theaters, you find this. So go on and press play and rewind this. This speech that is timeless. Love it like it or we lose it, can't find it. And we ain't keen on being reminded about the film if it isn't tough. We spend a lot of time at the cinema. It's just me and my friends, we watch plenty stuff. For movies, yeah, I've been above. Whether big or they small, no, for me don't make a difference. Love them. You're watching a movie with Silas, and it's dying in the theaters, you find this. So go on and press play and rewind this. This speech that is timeless. Love it like it or we lose it, can't find it. And we ain't keen on being reminded about the film if it didn't hit. No, gotta lose it. Watch movies with my friends, bringing joy, that's the blueprint. So come on and let's do this. Leave pain behind us and relax your mind. Come watch a movie with Silas. Yeah.